Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of September 2024. I'm your host, Robert, and Buddy Jesus really out here saying, "Suck it, Weinstein." And with me, I have...
Fuck Great Ape Vegeta! Took me like 14 tries to kill that fucker. Ugh.
And...
You feel something burning? I can't tell if it's either meat, can't tell if it's these chicken wings or some building on fire that's next to the Bisbee building.
Yep, the 53-year-old man child did it again.
$44 billion well spent.
All he had to do was just do the old movie cliche. Just hold up a boombox and say, "Grimes, I miss you. I'm sorry." But no, he's making it our problem now. Fuck off.
So anyway, welcome to the Surreal Resolution Blue Sky page.
It's not as populated, but it's friendlier.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully, well, we might do more in there. I don't know.
We're just waiting for the inevitable to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's when.
We're just doing like any minute now.
Because as soon as Apple, Google, and the government of Canada get wind of what's going on, it's not going to be fun for a certain someone. It'd be fun for us watching it from afar, but just fucking moron.
Why does that happen while we're snacking? Wings, anybody?
I actually had wings earlier. We're recording.
Recording
this on Thursday, so it's buy one get one boneless wings at B Dubs. I had hot barbecue. Oh. Those are pretty tasty. But, here we are, the album roundup for September of 2024. There was definitely stuff happening, a bit more happening than last month, I would say. Although, I'm gonna be honest, as far as, stuff I actively checked out, I don't know if it was because I was busy during the month or there was just other stuff occupying my time, but, I only really, fully honed in on, five albums. So just keep that in mind. My attention was kind of focused elsewhere. But that's maybe getting a bit ahead of ourselves. So might as well do the usual opening rundown business, letting you know what exactly did come out in September of 2024. And of course, we start right at the top with the first Friday, September 6th, 2024. First off, we had the new solo album from Jordan Rudess of Dream Theater with Permission to Fly. From the band Many Eyes, we had their debut record, The Light Age. From the British band Fat Dog, their debut album, Woof. From artist MJ Lenderman, the album Manning Fireworks. A lot of people seem to be talking about that in the musical blogosphere. From G Herbo, we had the album Big Swerve. In a three-way team-up, Ransom with Conway the Machine and V Dawn with Chaos Is My Ladder 2. From LL Cool J, his newest album, The Force. And unfortunately, there was a new Paris Hilton album, Infinite Icon.
Yeah, speaking of X.
Anyway, moving on to Friday the 13th. Hey, that was actually my roommate's birthday, but anyway. There was the new Ocean of Slumber album, Where Gods Fear to Speak. From former Brockhampton member Joba, the album Russell Boring. From saxophonist Colin Stetson, we had The Love It Took to Leave You. From Floating Points, we had the record Cascade. From Snow Patrol, who I believe Spectrum Pulse is apparently fond of, we had The Forest Is the Path. And from country singer Miranda Lambert, the album Postcards from Texas. Now, moving on to the week of September 20th, 2024, we had the self-titled debut record from Vended, that being the band formed by the sons of Corey Taylor and Sean Crahan. From Nightwish, we had their new album Yesterwind. From... I'm sorry, let me see if I read this right. Attack Attack with one exclamation point. That's the Warped Tour ass one. They had a new EP out called Disaster. What year is this? But anyway. Then there was the newest album from Kublai Khan with Exhibition of Prowess, which you might recognize for that one song going viral on TikTok. You know, the one where it literally just randomly yells the word two and then breakdown happens. It's good meme fodder.
Ugh.
If you're into Seether, for some reason, they had a new album out called The Surface Seems So Far. From Future, we had Mixtape Pluto. Lil Xan dropped an album, Diego. I could just sense the red flannel hovering over this. Of course, from...
He's still around?
Apparently. But in better news, from The Alchemist, we had his new album, The Genuine Articulate.
Congrats on the award!
Yes! Yay! Well deserved! Very well deserved!
If you're into MC Light, they dropped a new album, One of One. Wait, wasn't that the name of a fucking Gunna album? Anyway.
Well, at least I'm a better MC. And more, you know, more a veteran. Yeah.
True. From Jamie XX, the solo album In Waves. From Ed Schrader's Music Beat, there was Orchestra Hits. From Fiddlar, we had Surviving the Dream. From Julian Casablancas and The Voids, there was Like All Before You. There was a new Keith Urban album, High. A new Nelly Furtado album, Seven. And the new Katy Perry album, 143. Which I'm going to go ahead and assume was the position it debuted at on the Billboard charts. I think. Don't correct me on that. I think it's funnier that way. Then stopping off between Fridays, September 25th, saw the release of The Stars Will Light the Way, the newest album from Galnerius. That's the band whose singer did the opening theme for Hunter Hunter. You know the one that says you can smile again? Even when it's bald
in
the Chimera Ant arc where no smiling was happening? I still have not emotionally recovered.
Nobody has.
Great story arc, by the way. Y'all should watch it. Then let's move on to the final Friday, September 27th. Starting at the top, the much-anticipated new album from the Black Dahlia Murder with Servitude. And another case of, this band is still around? Destroy, Rebuild, Until God Shows, or Drugs for short, with Until God Shows. Okay. DaBaby with How the Fuck Is This a Mixtape, which, oh my god, dude. This is like Shark Sandwich all over again. You're making it too easy for the critics. There was a new album from Leon Thomas, as in the same Leon Thomas from Nickelodeon's Victorious, with Mutt. For another release from Called Stetson, this actually being the soundtrack to the universally acclaimed anime adaptation of Uzumaki.
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't it?
Look, to be fair, the music probably is unambiguously the best part. Just saying. I'll give it that much. Moving on from that, from Raheem Redcar, formerly known as Christine and the Queens, the new album, Hopecore. From Sophie, we had a posthumous self-titled album. From Shushu, and I can't believe I missed this album. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this. There was 13-inch Frank Beltrame, I think. Italian stiletto with bison horn grips. Yes, that's a whole title.
Okay. It's like a shopping list.
From Luke Bryan, the album Mind of a Country Boy. And last, but I guess I'm not sure how least you would describe it, Lady Gaga with the album Harlequin, the companion record to the universally acclaimed blockbuster Joker Folie à Deux. Telling you, man, that shit fucking made a... That shit made a Joker-illion dollars at the box office.
It pulled a Morbius. Not in a good way.
fucking Todd Phillips. But yeah, that's pretty much your roundup of just kind of like a snapshot of some of the more interesting things at a glance. So now we get more into the nitty gritty here of what we recommend, what we recommend you stay away from, or what we're just kind of indifferent on. And of course, as always, Alex, get the ball rolling.
Okay, I will probably keep this very short because I'm very tired. I don't have a whole lot to say because it was a very meh month. But I did find some things to talk about. What I don't have a lot to say about is the Lady Gaga Harley Quinn album. I just didn't have a lot to say about it. I'm sure if I listen to it enough times, Todd Phillips will show up like Beetlejuice to go, "Take me seriously! I'm a serious filmmaker auteur!" No, you're the guy who made the movie with Paging Dr. in it.
Yeah, remember when everyone thought that was funny?
Including 2008 was such a long time ago.
Yeah.
I have skeletons in my closet about that kind of thing.
We all do. But mm-hmm. We live and learn, unless you're Todd Phillips, in which case you just don't. The Short and Brutus album, Permission to Fly, I got nothing. I'm sorry. I kind of forgot to write some notes here, and I'm just waiting for a new Dream Theater album. It's not bad, but it's just not really what I go to Jordan for. See, Rhythm of Time and The Road Home, for example, is what I go to Jordan Brutus for. And Katy Perry, who was going to be my penance for last month. Mark Grondin. That old chirpy Canadian had to speak up and say what he said.
What did he say?
He basically did an anti-review of it saying, yeah, it's mediocre. We know. What else is there to say about it? Probably talking to, like, Pitchfork about their score for it, as usual. So, yeah, short version, yeah, it's just, there's nothing to say about it. It's just boring. It is the contentification of music. Moving on. But there are some stuff, worth listening to, like, this little-known Japanese band that some of you might have heard of, Kisoku Band? If that name seems familiar to some of you out there?
Oh, yeah, dude, I fucking love that band. I fucking love their guitarist. I relate to her on a deeply spiritual level.
Yeah, well, they put out a new EP this month called We Will. It's just four songs pining about the future because, you know, the whole band gig can't last forever. It's a nice listen. I enjoy it. Though I am wondering if there's going to be a second album. And by album, I mean something else. Hint, hint.
Six seasons in a movie!
Yeah, do that. Now for some other stuff you might not have been alerted to under the radar. There's a band called God is an Astronaut. They do post-rock. They have an album out called Embers. It is instrumental post-rock. It's quaint. It's relaxing. It's what I call lo-fi prog rock beats to study to.
You have my curiosity.
There will be tracks in the playlist, so check it out. And you'll probably like it if you like stuff like Astronoid, the more atmospheric kind of Tesseract, that kind of stuff. Now for the Black Dahlia Murder and their new album, Servitude. Post-Trevor Black Dahlia Murder may not be the same, but the feel is definitely there, and it does make for a quality listen. Though for me, it's more along the lines of listening to Alan Casti on the drums, because, whoo, the chops are indeed very mighty.
I can feel my ankles getting sore by proxy.
Yeah, I'm sure he did it all with that hookah that he showed off in his video when he got his new Tama drum kit. Like a true chat of a gentleman.
Brilliant.
Yes, yes, indeed. And now for a trifecta of things I like to call, do these acts from the mid-2000s still hold up? Well, not much to say for reasons that'll be very obvious. There's a new Daughtry EP, Shocked the System, Part 1.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I had to scramble for things to talk about. It was a very dry month. Also, there were two tropical storms that came through my city, and that wasn't fun. So, pardon me if I don't have a whole lot of deep cuts here. I'm just swinging for the fences. But, yeah, this is an EP from Chris Daughtry, who is, by all accounts, the most consistent American Idol alum in terms of output. Not so much in terms of quality, but in output, sure. This is just a 6-track EP of a new style of sound. It's on the better end of Octane Core, and that there's some grit and some riff to it. I'd call it a very solid 5.5 out of 10. Nothing new, nothing too flashy. It's just there to be a reintroduction. Actually, I should actually point out, I should actually look up, what is this released under? It is released under license to Big Machine.
Ew!
The industry strikes again, it seems.
Did you, please tell me he read the fine print.
I hope so. We gotta do what we gotta do, I guess.
Now, and then they said, your soul is mine. Oh,
God. Okay, moving on to this new Snow Patrol album, The Forest is the Path. I like Chasing Cars, You're All I Have, even though that was almost 20 years ago. Not familiar with a lot of the other stuff. They're kind of like the Arcade Fire effect in that I like Neon Bible, but not much else, not even The Suburbs. I'm sorry, Pitchfork indie nerds. Just not my thing. But so, yeah, this album here from Snow Patrol, it's completely inoffensive pop rock that's good to put on in the background. Or if you're driving. This is just a chill-out record. For me to write things about it would probably just be me writing a bunch of ellipses as I'm entranced in deep, relaxing thoughts. So, yeah, it's okay. And now for Seether, with the Surface Team so far. Look, I like Seether in 2004. They have one good album. Most fans of that era did. Everything after that, pretty much law of diminishing returns. And in this case, the edge is sadly gone in favor of Drop C Tune Generic Core.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Well,
there's just not a whole lot to be found here. Like, there are a couple of okay tracks on here, but okay is as far as I can go. We'll always have Disclaimer, or Disclaimer 2, which was their first, or second, or technically third studio album. It's a confusing situation. Don't think too deep into it. But there is one more thing here that I'd like to talk about. The first new album in almost 8 years from Rob Scallon.
Oh?
Crowded Rooms. Yeah. He put out an album this month. An album that he describes as a Midwestern emo metal album. It is, as the opening track says, blast beats and melodies. It makes sense, trust me. And it sort of ties into some of the stuff he's been going through away from the YouTube cameras. Namely his bipolar diagnosis.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, which, if you haven't seen that video, I recommend it, though it gets kind of heavy. And I'll be honest, that video and seeing John from ARTV disclose his autism diagnosis has got me thinking a lot more about what's going on in my head. If only I had the money for that kind of psychoanalysis and therapy, but I don't. So I'm just making do as best I can. That being said, this is a very good album. It's a little bit on the weird side because Rob is singing on here, which, again, he's doing a Midwestern emo type of vocal approach. Not so much like Spanish Love Songs or The Wonder Years. It's just more like subdued with like very aggressive metal riffs and drums playing in the background. Again, it makes sense in concept and in context. Just trust me on it. There will be tracks in the playlist for you to listen to and figure out. And, yeah. It's a very, very interesting album, to say the least. And one last thing before I head off here, because I got nothing else to say. I got my Dream Theater vinyl volume one box collection thing in the mail. It technically came a little bit late, mostly because of the storm that came through my state. So it took like 10 days to show up, but it did release in September, so it counts. And yeah, I finally have a copy of Metropolis 2 on vinyl. Yay me.
Woo!
That's all I got. I'll meet you back here next month for actual things worth talking about.
Yes. October is looking pretty solid so far.
Yes, it is.
But anyway, now we move on to the middle of this podcast, which, as always, is Mark's domain.
Yes, a month for which, well, I think I've been pretty consistent with my albums, because I either have either 10 or less, which has been, you know, because I have like 9 albums to talk about. I could have one more, but I do want to mention something that I looked over. Get into Leon Thomas album, Mutt.
Yep.
You know how last year told me on his first album he had a track that featured being the Butcher?
It's true, it did. I still can't believe that's a real thing, like...
Yeah, I found out on Mutt, he has a remix of that. Do you know who that features?
I can't...
Freddie Gibbs.
Oh!
Yeah.
Huh.
Two rappers that were once cool with each other, never, not anymore, did a track with the dude from Notorious.
I feel like there's some kind of cosmic irony in that.
Yeah. All right, and well, I was gonna mention this. Well, we're going like the last I'm a roundup. Even though it's heavy to bring it up again. Cost last album, The Feast Next to Jesus, is on streaming now. Well, it's been on streaming before his death, so. Yeah, I just want to mention that because we didn't have the tracks. Like, we didn't have the tracks on the playlist because, you know, it wasn't on streaming yet. But, yeah, I'm just letting you know.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. All right, now that I have this month. Started with, as before, our BET Hip Hop Awards Producer of the Year. Yes, baby, yes, it's a thing. The Alchemist.
Woo!
and yes, folks, he deserved it. So now he has a new, I want to say album, project, whatever, like, there's only 8 tracks on there. The Genuine Articulate. Which, of course, is, you know, basically, you know, eight tracks, I'm just doing this thing, and... Gotta say, it's some good shit. It's some good shit here. Of course, you have the single with Fires at the Ringer Schoolboy Q, which of course, nice as always. Something like has my favorite beat on there, which this got just very hypnotic. And of course, once again, hear the Alchemist rap. Like, you figure somebody who's from California, Beverly Hills, California. The dude's delivery is always, you know, rough and gruff, so big fingers. He's got that New York sound, which you can take from his tone. Or what he says. Then got tracks like Minnesota Fats with Action Bronson and Big Body Bess, which is cool, because you expect some very psychedelic wavy shit going on there. And Bone City, the Little Bars, and now I'm making for some Jerk Chicken, which, yeah, that's on the list right now. And of course, Big Body Best just saying whatever the fuck he says, because the dude always says some shit on there. I don't want to fuck this list again. Quick got Scientology with a Havoc, which. Of course, that would be kind of like the hardest track on there, and of course, with Havoc Snap on there, is you know, giving out some good shit there, and of course reminds me that if one project was there, it would have been dope. Well, it is dope, but you know, would have been more. But yeah, Everybody's Favorite Uncle, which, all right, which, okay, which has a very wavy thing going on because, like, you know, people call him, like, Uncle Al because given that, like, he always produced for rappers, like, recently he produced for rappers, like, you know, younger than him, and, yeah, because he, you know, kind of like that uncle to be like, oh, yeah, sure, man, you're not, like, oh, like, you know, kind of. You get it. You get the point.
That makes sense.
Diego Maradona calling the machine, that goes hard as hell over there. And this is probably the best thing I heard from Conway this year, to be honest, because I don't know because that, yeah. And I mean, okay, you're gonna check details of Larry June. Larry June is about, well, with Larry June, is, you know, breezy, light. Just basically, thinking about, you know, just doing that shit. And with seasons change. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of the shortest projects I've talked about from him, or at least this year. But, yeah. Well, aside from this EP today with Hit-Boy, which I still listen to. But, yeah, it's another, you know, good project. It's short, sweet, and got some good-ass beats in there. And, yeah. And yeah, this is why he's been one of the best at it for almost 30 years. Oh, of course, every 30 years. And now for more. So, I'm gonna talk about Fred again. Yeah, that guy. With his album, 10 Days. Wow, I might be familiar with this guy, like, some work with Rico Nasty, Brian Eno, FlixyX, Ed Sheeran, and of course, like, earlier this year, we did get a peek of a track he did with Anderson Paak and Chica, which they talked about, and on this album as well. Like, the album's called 10 Days. Like, there are 20 tracks, but it's more like 10 tracks and 10 interludes. So it's like, okay, on one hand, it's like, well, at least not as much. Well, but the thing is, like, the format is like, interlude song. You get the point. It's like, oh, okay. And this thing become more of a house vibe, or maybe house with some hip hop in there, because, like I said, you got Peckland and Chica's on there, Jazzy's on there. You got some people like Sampha, Fortet, Skrillex. That one guy mentioned on that Pitchfork list, Jim Legacy with an X, you know that guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they got a project that, well, none of y'all can say.
Right.
And listen to this album. I thought, you know what, this was fine. Like, again, the one thing I normally hear is the track list is the track listing, at least how it's listed, but I say, like, okay, like, there's also someone in there where it's like, there's an interlude called 10, but it's a song called 10, or I think the reason why it's different, because, like, there's a period before the 10 on the interlude track, and the track, the actual song is just called 10, like, then, like, yeah, that's kind of a, yeah, that'd be kind of annoying, like, you just have, like, because, like all the interludes are named, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, but you could, that kind of annoyed me a bit. Like, I don't just kind of like there, like Fearless, thought that was a good place to be, just staying there, and the inner track backseat with Scott Harkins and the Japanese House, which I guess is, which, look at that, I think that's a UK band or some shit, which, okay, your UK may be the Japanese house, I don't know, but yeah, like, you get some house vibes throughout, and I thought, okay, this is kind of cool, like, this is kind of cool, like, I can definitely, you know, get with this a bit, so yeah, it's kind of solid. Next up, Jamie XX, In Waves. Now it goes to another electronic British producer that I mostly know bits and pieces. And okay, is it this more that, you know, hyper electronic dance music with a bit of Ponderphonics in there, or at least one of them, courtesy of that one trip with Avalanches with all your children, which I thought, oh yeah, the samples Nick Giovanni's dance poem, and we were in words in his own way, which I've said that before, but yeah, that's where that stuff was from. Like, the rest of the album is, it's kind of cool. Like I said, this has a lot more dance elements with some experimental twins around them. Like, you got the Waiter All Night with Rami, Alvin Sim, and the rest of the XX. They got Life with Single Robin, which that was a grower. They got Grow On Me, and got songs like Still Summer and The Feeling I Get From You. Like, it is the type of music that gets played at festivals, summer parties, and given the fact this released around, the dog days of summer, it'd be like the finale summer party music that you listen to. I don't know. Like I said, the album is cool. I definitely, it's more of a self recommendation. Like I still say, yeah, it's worth a listen. All right, next up, Raheem Redcar, formerly known as Christina Queens, with Hopecore. So I guess now you can say now Redcar is at his final form. Yeah, and this is quite a surprise to me too, considering I guess he got something sooner. because he's gonna make another album, considering he did one last year and I got another one out. And being this with seven tracks with 50 minutes clocking with a 20-minute penultimate track, yes, 20 minutes. And I gotta say, even though. I will say, it's not much like losing about the music. It's like, I'm still digging the hell out of it. Like, about the music, it is more that dynamic dance art pop that hit the first time I was to it. Like, all right. It still hits. Like, it's still got some about to. Like, got songs like Elevate, Inside of Me with Inside Heaven with eight. Yeah, it's Inside, but with eight in it. With an eye. Yeah. And also Deep Holes. Those are good cousin there, along with the one track, Red Birdman Emergency. Basically, a callback to the one track on the first Red Card album, which I cannot say because it's in French, because I read enough, fucked that title up. A track called My Birdman on that album, which has nothing to do with Harvey Birdman. Or Michael Keaton, or Cash Money Birdman. There's a lot of Birdmans, right?
There's a lot of Birdmen, but only one bird person.
Man. Yeah, in terms of albums from I guess Redcar now, like, is it as high as an album? Maybe it's not as high as some of his previous albums, or maybe a little bit, but I still say they're fantastic to listen to. It's fantastic to listen to, like, probably one of the better pop albums to come out this year. And even though I know people said that pop had a good year of music people like, even though most of it's been stuff that's not my thing, especially the one y'all hype up. Not that one. I like that one. I like that one too. Maybe not that one, but okay, yeah, you get my point. But yeah, this was a good one. And now, Double Colin Stenson. All right, yep. So I'm just gonna get this one out of the way. Uzumaki. Well, at least the music's good. Or at least, I don't know, like, okay, look, the music is by far the best thing about the show, alright? It's still got the Keep It Homie atmosphere, it's still got something that makes me interested in, maybe say, okay, this actually carries out those themes of creepy unsettlingness that does work in its favor, even if most of the things that worked in the first episode got fucked up in the last episode. And then their episodes, like, what happened now. Oh, boy. I'll just say this about Uzumaki the anime. It was going to be my best of list, but that ain't happening anytime soon.
Oh dear.
Worst of, not really. Wait. Worst of, not really. I mean, I see more anime this year, or at least stuff that I think is worse. You know about this soon, but the music is all good. The music is great. Like, if you left the show thinking, oh my god, you can say, well, music is dope. Well, yeah, the same you said for this other album, The Love It Took to Leave You, which, let's get this pack that. Menacing feel. This is the menacing feel. Like this one track in there called The Six, which had that saxophone playing, which sounds really good in there, you know. There, but it was. I found two 20-minute tracks, both him and Red Card, that are as long as the Alchemist is like every recent project. Find that out, but yeah. Now some hip hop shit. Collabs. Yeah, again, I've been doing that a lot lately. Just random ass collabs. This time, Jay Worthy. Remember him?
Yep.
Not teaming up with a rap producer, made in TYO. Somebody who I have heard of, but I not that
I remember him being a XXL freshman 1 year, and then I've never thought about him since.
Yeah. So he's an enemy to get a project time after time. And I gotta say, this is actually kind of solid. It's like, okay, like the like this has that smooth melancholy and often soulful production. Like, okay, I guess Mate is the producer of this, and like, okay, he must have some, he got some good shit on him, which, alright, that sounds nice. It sounds nice, like, also short and sweet with 10 tracks for 24 minutes, which is good to fairly listen. Like, alright, this is kind of cool. Like, sometimes we're okay, but it's like, okay, this is another project that's cool. Like, I can definitely say, I can turn this to it. So, yeah, I'm gonna go with that. Then we got Ransom, Conway the Machine, and V-Don. Chaos is my leader too. And it's another project that I talked about with Ransom, which I talked about this year. And I think the second or third thing I talk about with Conway this year. I keep forgetting. All the releases of Conway is there. It's the strongest record he's did this year, even though I still think it's this year. Everyone's kind of, man. And as Ransom, the project was good too. Both of them good bars. There's grimy street shooters always. They got joints like Limitless, Photobomb, and Bored Again. Those are some dope cuts, which, all right, I can get with that. So yeah, that was all good. And last but not least, This one I kind of checked out of curiosity, because even though I never heard of a record of his, well, only heard mostly a lot of singles, maybe some deep cuts here and there. Yeah, LL Cool J, The Force. Been about 11 years since his last album, Authentic, and his first. We'll get one on the label, and also on Def Jam 2 since 2008's Exit 13, I figured, you know what, I guess I'll go to one and check out this album, given that, you know, he's really, basically, a legend in the game, 30 years, also 30 to 40 years of the game, and... Okay, it's fine. It's something to scoff at. It's like, I kind of figure it'd be most like that. Like, yeah, most of it's about him, Brian, but being a legend, which is, again, I'm to scoff at. And, I'm like, and it's all fine. Like, the Dutch here is mostly handled by Q-Tip, which, second time I jumped onto the album, handled by Q-Tip, because I've been the day album a few years back. And it does have these, very offbeat, quirky vibe that fits in there, You got features from rappers like Snoop, Nas, Rick Ross, Fat Joe, Busta Rhymes, Eminem, which, well, you could say out of all those, all the features, he was the worst one, but his verse wasn't as bad as, well, from what I heard from the other album. And then you got some people that I'm aware of, like, you got people like, Sona, like, I'm gonna fuck up their names. Sona Jones, Sonia Jabarte, Mad Squablis, Jay San, and Don Pablito is there too. Also Sweetie was there too. I know she's on the track. On track that I like the most, like possibly. I don't know. I know the track with her I liked. Yeah, like you got joints that I liked. Like Saturday Special, Grew on Me, which is fine. And I'm liking that the first, liking that most of the first time. The December was pretty good. Basquiat Energy, Mars Energy was dope. And the Val Cocoon album was a nice touch too. I'll say that. I think it's proven that even though you're rapper, you're at 50, that doesn't mean you're not dope anymore. Sometimes when you're, you know, reached a certain age, you can still, you know, do what you do. And yeah, maybe that was, you know, pretty good.
All right.
And that is it.
Also pretty brief and to the point, all things considered.
Oh, thank God.
But now it's time for me to round things out here in this last stretch. And like I said, I only really have like 5 albums here. Pretty much, let's see, 1, 2 of which were already touched on, so this might go by pretty fast. So let's start with my only real top pick for the month being Servitude by the Black Dahlia Murder. So yeah, it's been a pretty up and down past few years for the band. Trevor passing away, the shifts in lineup, mainly with rhythm guitarist Brian Eschbach getting bumped up to lead vocals. And now we have this new album here giving us a pretty concise 30 minutes and some change of Black Dahlia Murder goodness. Speaking on this one is both pretty easy and kind of hard, not necessarily because of like the context leading up into it, but because the Black Dahlia Murder are pretty damn consistent in quality, all things considered. While their records are pretty much exactly what you expect each time, they're so goddamn great at it, it's like, it doesn't even matter. Like think about, like, your favorite local restaurant to eat at. Not like a chain, but, like, something that, you know, is, like, your neighborhood's thing. Like, you always have that one thing you like ordering, and every time you order it, it's always just so perfectly on point.
Ah, yes. It's called Modest Pizza. They got some really good pizza in there. It's expensive as shit, but it's worth it.
Hell yeah. So, yeah, the Black Dahlia Murder is kind of like that. I mean, for me, they're like a top 20 all-time favorite band. Pretty much because of that, because every album is a fucking banger. And, yeah, this one's a fucking banger. Like, right from the jump, the guitars on fucking the album opener, Evening Ephemeral, go hard as hell with the fast and furious riffage, the equally fast breakneck lead guitar solos and melodies and stuff, the very rapid, precise blast beats and drum work, just every stick hit, every sticking pattern so perfect in place. Plenty of all that thrash and even some groove and equal measure, an altogether ominous atmosphere, and of course, Eschbach doing pretty damn well in the vocals, all things considered. Now, my observation from the singles leading up to it was that, as lead vocalist, he kind of carried himself with this relative mid-range. Like, he had solid streaks and bellows, but he never quite, it didn't sound like he was going to the extremes of Trevor before him. And to a certain extent, that kind of holds true for the album as a whole, but I'm not really saying that as a bad thing. Like, obviously, this is his vocals, the way he does death metal. It's still, like, as he does the screams and stuff, it's got this really, like, palpable sense of evil and maliciousness that you want from a good Black Dahlia Murder record. There's some really standout stuff on the mic with him, too, like on songs like Mammoth's Hand and Asserting Dominion. It's gonna take a bit to assess where this probably fits into the grander Black Dahlia discography, but as I'm feeling about it right now, yeah, it's another certified goddamn banger. Now for the 3 quick rounds type of things. Stuff that I thought was pretty damn solid, but I don't have much to say. The Alchemist, The Genuine Articulate, Genuine and Articulate indeed. 20 minutes, very to the point. The Alchemist and Company delivering some grimy flows on top of these really great beats that mix in plenty of kind of lush soul and R&B samples. Songs like Minnesota Fats with that kind of like fuzzed out funk guitar thing going on. And of course, plenty of that good boom bap gangsta shit. The posthumous self-titled album from Sophie. Coming down on this album feels a bit weird given her unfortunate passing and kind of what went into making this record. But the only way I can describe it, and I realize this is going to sound a bit mean, but like, it's twice as long as Oil of Every Pearl's Unsides, and it's only about half as good. Like, the thing with that particular record is that you can tell it was fully Sophie's in terms of the production, the vocals, and how both were kind of like intermixing and building on each other. But here we have a whole myriad of collaborators in the kitchen on top of the leftover production work that Sophie never got to fully finish themselves and all, trying to take these ideas and turn them into complete songs. But it definitely feels like there's either an absence or like this kind of creative split between the collaborators and where Sophie hypothetically would have taken these songs. And it's kind of a bit hard to ignore if you've like fully internalized the Sophie sound. Like, seriously, listen to the two records back to back and you'll get what I mean. But like, it's not bad or anything. There's some solid songs in here. And then, of course, there's this Fat Dog album, Woof, the debut from this very offbeat British post-punk slash electronic act. I'm not sure where I fully fall on it, like whether I fully like it or fully like just eh. Because here's the thing, there's a handful of solid songs on here. You got a good mix of like, you know, trance, rave, kind of dark wave influence, a lot of 90s like, you know, dance with kind of like these very Idols type of vocals over top that make for something pretty unique. But something about just kind of how the album is structured once you get to like the end of things, it kind of feels, it feels more like two EPs smushed together than like a proper album. Like more proof of concept for the band's sound and approach than like a complete debut. But that being said, there was enough I liked here that I'm not opposed to hearing a follow-up and seeing where they could flesh things out. And that's it for the quick rounds. And then there's my one lowlight. And, you know, something I was kind of thinking in regards to, like, the whole Katy Perry thing is kind of, what is it that defines, like, bad music or the worst music of X year for anyone? Because bad comes in many different kind of flavors. There's, like, you know, technical incompetence. There's philosophical repulsion. There's something that's so bland and empty that it might as well not even exist to you. There's the Todd in the Shadows rule of bad is the absence of good. And just a whole kind of lot of stuff. Like, to the point where I can kind of see, like, what Mark's point was about, like, the Katy Perry album. Like, yeah, of course it was terrible, but, like, was it really gonna go any other sort of way? So, like, why does it matter?
I'll add something to that whole thing. That Camila Cabello album was at least interestingly bad. Baffling in execution. It makes me confused as to what the execution actually was. But, like, that's interestingly bad. Katy Perry is just bad.
Yeah, just not worth putting too much emotion into hating. You know, this isn't like the last Avenged Sevenfold album, which was such a startlingly incomplete mess that you just have to stare in awe. But why am I going into this preamble for my lowlight? Because I need you to kind of keep this mindset as I'm explaining the record in question to kind of meet my headspace and where I'm trying to make sense of all this. So, one of the more noteworthy stories in the rock and metal sphere of the past few years was the unfortunate fallout of Every Time I Die breaking up. With everyone, you know, splitting off on their own paths, giving us Better Lovers, whose debut is coming out this month, and of course on the flip side of the coin, Keith Buckley with the band Many Eyes, whose debut The Light Age dropped this past month, roughly around the time that they started opening up for Sum 41's Farewell Tour. As a reminder, I only caught the past few songs that they played in their set before, obviously, they, you know, packed up and then the other bands went on. So, with this being the first one out of the gate, The Light Age, the comparisons between this and whatever Better Lovers are cooking are going to be inevitable. This one kind of sets the tone in a certain respect, even if Better Lovers as a band technically came first. So, why is this the low light? Because the thing is, on the surface, it's pretty all right. Like, the album opener, Revelation, sets the stage as you would expect. It's got, like, some standard chugging heavy, like, rock radio riffage leading into equally radio-friendly melodies in the chorus, bolstered by the usually, admittingly on-point vocals of Keith and all. And to be fair, the way the melody hits on that one is, like, pretty solid. And that tone remains pretty consistent throughout the record, while you have your more melodic songs like Future Proof and Third. The album still tries to keep things in pretty firmly heavy, energetic territory with jams like Harbinger and Speechless that still have some of that leftover Every Time I Die energy. Like I could easily see this, like, getting a decent amount of play on, like, the, whatever the Sirius XM stations are for rock and metal and all that jazz. Not the jazz stations. You get my point. So, again, overall, songwriting-wise, it's fairly competent. It might not be the most exciting thing in the world, but, like, I don't know, sometimes you just want catchy hooks and pretty straightforward riffs. I'm not gonna blame you for that. So, why is this the low light again? Well, like I said, it kind of stems from the entire Every Time I Die breakup situation. This album does not exist without all that happening. So, at least in my opinion, you kind of have to look at it in that context. So, as a reminder, from what I remember at the time, when we were talking about this news when it was new, the conclusion that I came to put this in Reddit speak, r/Keith was the asshole. Like, it definitely seemed like he was the one to blame for a lot of things. And if you need kind of like a brief reminder, I'm going to try and keep this succinct. So, a bunch of shows that Every Time I Die was playing around the end of 2021 got canceled so Keith could prioritize sobriety and seek therapy and focus on mental health and all. But according to subsequent statements, specifically by bassist Steve Massice, this kind of backfired. Like, he seemed to take the wrong lessons from the therapy and ultimately led to Keith treating their then new manager horribly to the point of tears. Just kind of a lot of passive aggressive bitterness towards the other band members over all kinds of stupid shit, etc. And I think the main reason why I ultimately came down against Keith, keep in mind I was kind of double checking some of the statements and stuff, was ultimately just like a matter of attitude and tone in the statements. Like I said, Masiche's statement was very precise, unambiguous, to the point, down to earth, you know, like how an actual person would speak. And Keith's statements, both on social media and even at some of his solo one-man shows after the fact, oh lord, they were coded in a lot of that really annoying self-improvement new age therapy speak. You know, the kind, you go to one session and you start sounding like one of those toxically positive Instagram pages.
Oh boy.
One of those. And that sort of gave the game away a bit, but if you were still kind of on the fence about things, this album also kind of gives the game away, because the main thing I got from, like, paying attention to the lyrics is that the central theme of the record is fundamentally about betrayal. Basically, every song is, to some extent, about the feeling of being stabbed in the back by people close to you. At least that's what it's saying. A brief selection of lyrics, if I may. I see some cowards, I see some frauds, I see my diamonds in the teeth of dogs. There's something you're not telling me. I can feel it, I can feel it. For so long, you think it's nothing. How could you ask this of me? Try to have mercy on me. You've broken every promise made. All the little things we had, they're not the kinds of things I want back. And I know men of God, and you're not either one. Which I hate, because that's actually a really clever line, to be honest, and I hate that it exists in the context of this fucking record. It's like, I wish I had a metaphor here, but you see my point. Not to mention, on the subject of the new age therapy stuff, I couldn't help but notice that pretty much every song on the album brings up the word love in the lyrics in one way or another. Again, another choice selection of lyrics. I gave you everything, you kept the misery, you threw my love away, I saw it on your face. You don't know what I'm like when I'm loved. From out of the grave comes our love. I will kill for love. Do I strike you as a liar? I'm a servant, baby. I've been loving just to give. You kind of see my point here? Like, this really does just feel like it's just the natural extension of those fucking pissy, like, therapy-approved fucking social media statements. And this is just like, oh, by the way, I should probably also point out, I'm a servant, baby, I've been loving just to give. That comes from a song called Servant, where he also follows that with the lyric, oh, when I found Jesus.
So you're telling me this is BetterHelp, the album?
Ugh.
Oh, no.
You know, I was wondering why I was half expecting a YouTube sponsorship to happen at some point.
God.
Yeah. So that's ultimately the thing with this record. Like, musically, it's fine. It holds together all right if you're not thinking about it too much. But the more I think about this record, it just leaves this absolutely sour, bitter taste in my mouth, given everything preceding it. And that, for me, is why it's a low light. That, for me, is why, honestly, if I was doing a worst of list, I might consider this record. Just because I don't like thinking about it. I don't like thinking about the music. I don't like the attitude. I don't like the way it retroactively, like, honestly, this almost makes me wonder what it is I ever saw in the music of Every Time I Die in the first place.
I think it comes from a difference in perspective. To me, this sounds like it's fueled by bitterness and outward loathing and a very displaced sense of worth. That's not good. That's very unhealthy.
Very. And it also doesn't help that, if I'm remembering right, I'm pretty sure one of the guitarists, or possibly also both of them, got the boot from the band right before the tour started.
Oh, yeah, that happened too.
Yeah. So, Many Eyes, The Light Age, it's not good.
Oh, dear. Like, okay, to end it on a happier note, no matter where you stand between this band and Better Lovers, let's all applaud the true winner of this whole situation. Andy Williams. He gets paid by Tony Khan and AEW to wrestle a couple times a month, and he makes a damn good living doing it.
You know, I'm gonna go with that. Like that, that's a good note to end this on. Good on Andy Williams.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's pretty much all my stuff. Looks like we're just about around an hour or so. Maybe less once all the edits kick in.
Yeah.
So, again, playlist in the description for the albums that we recommend you listen to. And, of course, as always, all the plugs and stuff. As a reminder, Surreal Resolution is officially on Blue Sky. So check us out there. The website, SurrealResolution.com. For written articles, this podcast, Podcast O&A, all of that good stuff. Don't forget about our Discord, so you can always be immediately notified when new stuff goes up there. And you know where to find all the rest of us as well. So that's pretty much going to do it for this roundup. New weekly episodes, all of that stuff. And until next time, peace out.